From Glitch HQ on Riverside Avenue in Employable, Organized, Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk gaming and game development.
I'm Martha McGarry, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Martha Croy, I too make nice games. For this week's episode, our topics are game dev as a day job and unions. And so, if everyone's ready, let's start.
This is always the awkward part where someone's supposed to chime in, and no one knows when to do anything. So I just I can't stand the silence. So I say something, and I don't know.
It's usually me, but if I don't say anything, then it does get weird.
Yep.
And then you say something, and it's super weird.
Yep.
And I prefer that.
Well, you're welcome.
It's a service to our listeners.
In terms of meta news, Joggernauts is out.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah, and it's out on Switch and Steam and Itch, right? Is it on Itch?
I don't think so.
Is it not on Itch? Okay, well.
See, okay, Henry, if you're listening, Joggernauts is out, so you can stop emailing me about it. Love, Martha.
Has he been emailing you about it?
He's like, so if you listen to the devs when Joggernauts is me out, like at least once a month.
Oh my goodness.
So, Henry, it's out now. It's been out for
a couple
of weeks.
I like that he emails you about it. It's hilarious. Me and my brother played through it 2 weeks ago. And dang, it's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, it's me and my brother playing, and we probably argued the entire time. So that
also, you guys are not good at video games.
Right, yes, there's that. Dang it, you can say that because you beat us in everything, I swear.
My favorite part of that is that is 100% not true.
Okay, that's
you. You beat me in most everything.
Oh yeah,
but I beat you in one or two things, and then that's the world to you.
Yeah, it sucks.
If you can't win at everything, it might as well be nothing, right? Okay, we should probably take a step back and explain Joggernauts to listeners who might not be familiar with the title.
Yeah, so Joggernauts is a cooperative platforming game. It's an infinite runner sort of thing where like you play as four different characters and they just run another thing. But like you can swap between first person and other people constantly. And then there are colored walls that are like blocking your path and stuff. And you need to deal with them by having the person in front be the correct color.
Yeah, it's a color matching game that requires coordination between multiple people.
Yes.
Which is partly why it's so difficult.
Yes.
In that sort of charming yell at your pals kind of way.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've been leaning to that with their marketing of it. And they've been designing their levels to really like leverage that strength of that experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's got charming art, it's got great music.
Yes.
And it just came out.
Thank goodness the music is good, because like we were stuck on some levels for a long time.
But if you're worried, because if you can't like see colors differentiated or every color blindness, they do have other ways of matching the little monsters to the things. So
right.
Don't worry about that.
There's no like colorblind mode, but they've done the art in such a way that it's you could put your TV on grayscale and you could still tell the difference between the things. So they have other elements. Yeah.
Spiky and round and stuff like that.
Yeah, they got different numbers of eyes and stuff. There's
plenty
of different.
That's a really good approach to colorblind, where rather than making a whole separate mode for it, just make it suitable for the colorblind.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool. Mm-hmm. It's out. Actually, not only is the game out, but the original soundtrack is available, I think, on various places you get music these days. I'm not a teenager. I don't know. But the soundtrack just by itself is really good. You should check that out.
Speaking of soundtracks.
Mm-hmm. What now?
Oh, well, we had an episode on soundtracks.
Ah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were really teeing up one of your legendary transitions.
No. I don't. What?
They're not good unless you don't expect them.
Yeah, I suppose. They should hit you like a truck.
Right.
Other news, what else came out, Steven?
Soul Calibur 6.
Uh-huh.
I spent all day yesterday playing through Soul Calibur 6, and I'm still not done with it, because there's a ton of single-player content in this game.
Yeah.
And I don't normally get into single-player content in fighting games, but maybe that's because most single-player content in fighting games is not good. It's pretty fun in this one.
Mm-hmm.
There's this mode where you can create your own character, and then like you go on adventures and stuff, and you meet other characters in Soul Calibur, and it's, man, maybe I'm fanboying a little bit, but it's really fun.
So you lose me there is the characters in Soul Calibur. Like, that doesn't sound that interesting to me.
They're not, like, iconic. Well, I mean, like Mario iconic.
Yeah.
But
there's six of these, so they have history.
Yeah,
right, for fans.
They have sentimental value to me, I suppose. So that's
and I hear some of them wear clothes.
Some of them. Mainly the men.
Oh,
that's
dear.
A separate thing. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can dress up all the characters in other clothes. You can put clothes on your characters.
Oh, so it's like an action figure playset also.
Yes.
See, I'm on board now.
Awesome.
Before we got into your guys' topics that you brought today, I wanted to just mention, I just got back from a conference. I don't know if the listeners can tell, but my voice is pretty raspy because I'm sick because I went to a conference, which is what always happens.
Yeah.
I went to Adobe Max, which is the thing I go to every year, and longtime listeners of the show will have heard my recaps in previous years where I talk about it. It's a conference Adobe puts on. They call it the Creativity Conference. I had a really good time this year, despite being basically like in utter misery the whole time because the content was really good and I got to see Beck, which was really cool. They do a free concert every year, and they usually get some like really good mid-tier college rock indie band.
Yeah.
That's great. But this year they just got Beck. And so like I was sitting right in the standing right in the front, and I felt like a teenager again.
Cool.
Aside from the ankle pain, it was great. But that day starts at like 7 a.m.
Oh,
and
dang.
Then it's sessions all day, and then there's a keynote at night where there's a keynote in the morning, and there's a keynote at night called Sneaks, where they preview technology from the labs.
Oh, cool.
Which is my favorite part of Adobe Max. They show off these things that they get these scared engineers, these proper engineers who are working on these features day in, day out. They pull them out of their caves at Adobe HQ, put them on stage in front of 14,000 people, and make them demo their latest tech.
Yeah.
And they say, like, if it goes wrong, clap for them. Like, and then that has happened. And they showed off 10 of these things, and they were just amazing pieces of technology in really rough forms, but you really get the idea for it. And a lot of it uses Adobe's new AI platform, which is like, they're really making good use of that stuff for like rotomasking. And so video people probably know what I'm talking about because there's been news about these things. It's really exciting. And they always bring a comedian or an actor on stage to sort of serve as the MC of the show. And they had Tiffany Haddish this year.
Oh, yeah.
And she was really great.
Yeah.
She was hitting on everybody. It was very charming. And then after that, there's a big party that happens, like sort of a mixer, basically. But it's like they put up, they make it into this like crazy neon park, and it's like free food and drinks and all that. And then there's the concert, and then you have to make it back to your hotel. And it's like then you go to bed, and then you have to get up next morning at 7 a.m. for more sessions. Because they do it on the second to last day instead of the last day, because people... they get on the airplane the last day. So like it's the worst Tuesday night concert you can go to, but it was Beck, so I had a great time. there's no useful information in this recap because I can't really organize it.
The useful information is that Mark is very excited about this trip, and you should all be excited for him.
Yeah.
And Adobe is cool.
Also yeah. that.
Yeah, like it it's a very expensive conference, and it shows. Like,
yeah.
So, you know.
Did you get fancy swag this time?
I did. I got a ton of t-shirts.
Hey.
I've been to WMAX every year for the past so many years. Mm-hmm. And so I know I know the strategy, right? Mm-hmm. I know which I don't want to get the cheap like portable batteries. Or the like all the flyers and cards they hand out, like I'll take a picture of the booth or get the website if I'm interested, but I don't want to take anyway. And I know like what to stand in line for, the people stand in line for like these neat experiences, and then they come up with a trinket or some other cool thing. And I can like spot which ones are worth it. And like also you only have so much time between sessions if you don't want to skip a session to hang out in the expo area. And so anyway, I've turned it into a science. And
cool.
So I ended up it was a 5-day trip. And I came back with 7 t-shirts.
Nice.
So I basically I shouldn't have packed at all. I should have just went with what I was wearing and just, you know, collected shirts along the way. And some of them are really cool because it's a design conference. So the t-shirts are not like some dumb corporate logo. It's like cool stuff.
Hey.
They had Monotype, the font foundry, had this cool thing where you'd get in line and then you would take this little quiz on an iPad. It was like, what font are you? Mm. It was like, very cute. And then depending on what font you were, they'd give you a t-shirt with that font on it. Which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
But you could pick whatever you wanted if you didn't like that one. But you know they do cool stuff, and like they had they had food everywhere. And on the third day they had a corral of puppies, like actual puppies, because they know you get stressed at conferences. And these are all rescue puppies, so they're not puppies to play with. They're puppies to hold and comfort and be comforted by.
Oh,
and it was just the charmingest thing.
Wow.
And there was a long line for that.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
Wow. Huh. Dang, that sounds, that's why it's so expensive, is because they just pull out all the stops.
Well, the thing is about like a lot of that stuff is these are all their sponsors, right? Yeah. So they provide a lot of these things and it's a promotional for them.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it, you know, once you sort of like have like let go of the cynicism of that,
yeah,
you just have a great time.
Yeah.
You know? And then of course there are a couple of really good actual things, information you want to find out about. I talked to someone at a booth that did localization. I talked about game localization for like 25 minutes,
mm-hmm,
and got all their information and like got the lowdown on their thing. And like, you know, they might have me as a customer. Like,
hey,
so,
yeah,
you know, maybe it works. Cool. I don't know. But yeah, all the session content was great as well. I went to a session on advanced tips in Photoshop. The speaker there, she was like just absolutely brilliant and funny and fun. And it was inside of a movie theater.
Mm.
Some of the sessions were held off site. And so it was also very comfortable,
hey,
which is not common for these conferences. I went to stuff on Illustrator and I spoke to the Illustrator team and I was like begging them, like, please, can you bring the drawing tools from Animate into Illustrator? And he was like, I don't understand why you would want that. I've never heard that before, but send me a video of you doing it and maybe I'll consider it. So like, okay, so it's a long shot, but yeah, we'll see. Cause I love the drawing tools in one tool, but anyway, yeah.
Ah, sure.
I had a really good time.
Cool. Well, fun. That's exciting stuff.
Yeah. And like, and normally I have, it's really hit or miss, is it's very much dependent on what Adobe announces, right? Because that's news and interesting, particularly during the sneaks and stuff, because, you know, I use their products. So when they make announcements that are relevant to me, and that's kind of a crapshoot because even though I use many of them, I don't use all of them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So like this year they announced Photoshop for iPad, not relevant to me.
Yeah.
But they announced other things in their other tools that made me more excited. And then the sessions, depending on what they offer, because sometimes they have unique things. A lot of times it's just like advance this, advance that. And those are great. But sometimes you get the real special ones. Like I got to see Roman Mars from 99% Invisible did a live show for one of the sessions. And I went to that. And it's all really good stuff. So this year was really, really fun. And I hate going alone. But this year there was enough to keep me interested that I was all right. And I met a bunch of cool people too. So
awesome.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Well, there's, you know, what's another really expensive conference?
Steven, here it comes. She's going to do it.
The Game Developers Conference.
Yes.
And, but if you happen to work as a game dev for your day job, you might get sent to GDC as part of your job.
Yes. Oh, yes. That did happen.
You might get sent to PAX as part of your job.
Oh, yeah. That happens too.
Also that.
So my topic is game dev as a day job, because I now am a game dev. I get paid to do it as my day job. It's pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
But
I do like that, like the trajectory of your life as charted by your time on this show.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's very, I like it a lot.
Yeah.
I like where you were and where you are and where you're going.
You know, I think about that a lot and it feels good. I feel like I've improved a lot just in general, all over the place.
And I feel like the show is just here to document it.
Yeah.
Just to be there alongside as you were making that journey. I think it's really exciting.
There were some good times. There were some bad times. Only good times on this show, of course.
Right.
Yes. but I really wanted to talk about like the differences between being a game dev like on the side and being a game dev like as your job, because I think there's some pretty significant key differences. Like for now I feel like creatively fulfilled in my career. So like I'm working on games full time. So every day I spend 8 hours working on a game and then I get home and I don't want to do that anymore because I've been doing it for 8 hours. So it's kind of difficult to like finish up other projects. So like I haven't really done any work on Fingence in a long time. And I'm still working on Widget Satchel.
But I can confirm you're not as excited about it.
Not as I used to be. Yeah.
You're drained.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. Well, yeah, because like, it's not crunch because like it's a separate thing, but like we can talk about crunch when we get to the union episode. Maybe it's probably relevant, but it's like, I don't know. Like I feel like I'm putting in the work for like this thing that I'm trying to improve on a lot, which is being a better game dev. And so when I get home, I want to just relax and not do that or improve on other things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that would be. Dancing. I would like to improve on dancing. But, you know, sometimes you can't. Sometimes you got other obligations. Like, you know, I'm going back to school now and stuff. So those things, you know, can get in the way of things.
Right. It used to be that you fit a bunch of things together.
Yes.
Now you have to fit a bunch of things around this job.
Yes, that's actually exactly it. Right. Yeah. My previous job was very flexible in the terms of hours I did because I was effectively on call. I was just like computer staff and I just made sure the computer things ran and I send emails out. Whereas now, you know, I actually have to be there 8 hours a day and make sure I'm making progress on work. Sometimes it's harder than you'd think, because, like, despite the fact that I'm getting paid to work on games, it's not easy. It doesn't make it easier. It just makes it sustainable. I also, like, am not able to choose what things I work on, at least not when you're, like, in the process of making the game. It's like, I'm working on Treasure Stack. And I've been working on Treasure Stack for seven months. And so I have not been able to work on anything else at work except for that. So you can't stop until the work gets done. You just keep doing it. Which, I mean, I'm learning a lot doing it, and it's, again, it's fulfilling, but it's also, you know, sometimes you want to do something else. Mm-hmm. That's where Widget Satchel comes in, which is nice. I get to, you know, sometimes do some game design work. I don't get to do it at work very often. It's mainly code stuff, which is also weird, because I never really considered myself much of a coder until, like, you get hired to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm like, dang, I know code things. So, like, you, like, Mark and Martha will say code stuff, and I'll be like, I kind of know what they're saying now. It's wild. What's also nice, what's nice about it, though, is, like, you get to spend all of your day working on games instead of, like, working on it here and there. So it doesn't feel like you're, you know, like, trying to fit in this game in your regular life, which is good, because, like, I feel like I'm spending my day, like, improving my skills, mm-hmm. which I did not feel when I was working in the past. I don't know, like, you both have worked on, like, dev things in the past, right? So, mm-hmm. like, do you feel that way, too, with relation to that? Like, do you feel like you are improving your skills at your day job?
Well, I don't have a day job this time. I'm doing some freelance work, but I'm spending actually much more of my time on Widget Satchel
yes.
than I am on freelance stuff. But when I was doing more full-time freelance or you know, in a day job, I think my favorite part of it was, and you sort of touched on it, which is that you do the work that, and it can be exciting or it can be boring. It can be a mix of things depending on the day, depending on the type of project or whatever,
right.
or whatever you're particularly working on. Mm-hmm. But you can leave it there.
Yeah.
And so as much as I would often feel drained and not be able to do more things, there's the freedom of not having it hang over you.
Yeah.
The way that when you have a passion project and you set your own deadlines, and if you are trying to keep yourself to a standard or a timeline, every, like, break you take, every movie you watch on Netflix, you can feel the time slipping away.
Yeah, totally.
But your work stuff, and if, you know, if you're putting in the proper hours, or maybe even you're doing a little bit of overtime, you still get to go home and leave it behind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can think about it, or maybe you can even do some work at home if you choose to.
Right.
Or, you know, in those cases where you're forced to, and that's another matter. But but in a lot of these cases, it's nice to be able to leave it there.
Yes.
That I've liked a lot. Mm-hmm. In terms of, like, improving skills at a day job, I tend to get work that I've taught myself in the past.
Oh, okay.
And I get bored of work if I'm not learning on the day job.
Yeah.
And that happens way more often than I wish it did.
Mm.
And that seems pretty negative, but, like, a lot of times I'll get tired of work fairly quickly if it's not challenging me.
Sure.
Like, almost immediately. I get tired very quickly.
I feel that at work sometimes too.
And then it becomes a matter of, like, and you really have to help prevent yourself from, like, resenting it. Because it's not anyone's fault. Like, they hired you to do the work because you know how to do the work.
Right.
You're good at it.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not actually their responsibility to give you more and better work every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But it will feel like that.
Yeah.
And you have to keep that in check.
Right. So, Martha, you also work as a dev in your day job.
Yes.
Do you feel like you're improving your dev skills?
Sometimes. Well, with the state of the code base that I get to work on most of the time, I feel like I'm going backwards in skills.
Oh no.
but don't tell anybody I said that. I definitely have learned a ton of stuff. Like, I didn't know PHP.
Mm-hmm.
And now I know PHP. And just, like, every day I'm like, oh, I should look this up. Oh, I should look that up. So that's, I feel like because I get to work on dev stuff every day, like, those skills are, like, I don't lose them.
Yeah.
But then I do feel the same thing where, like, because I use up all my dev brain at work, it's really hard to come home and do any sort of code.
Yeah.
Anything really, because it's so draining. I just come home and I'm like, okay, now time to veg, because my brain literally cannot take in more information or like produce more information.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's difficult. Yeah, I found that like doing something different in Widget Satchel is really helpful. Like if I'm doing more dev work in Widget Satchel, that's probably sometimes the hardest. Sometimes I feel really inspired to do it, but like other times it's like the hardest for me to do because like I just was doing that for 8 hours already.
Yeah.
But design work is great because like I have not been doing design work.
So sometimes
like,
I'll notice you'll pick up a dev task in Widget Satchel that was like not really on your plate.
Yeah.
Was lower priority, and I always get the impression that it's because it's filling a like a hole that you need. That it's exciting you, and that's why you're doing it.
Yeah.
And I leave to it.
Yeah.
Because it's on the checklist. It's got to get done.
Sometimes that is the case. Other times I'm like, oh, it's preventing me from doing design work. Oh, I got to fix this thing. so that happens too. But so I feel you, Martha. Like it's hard. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe have you tried like working on something that's not dev related, like drawing?
Yes. Ah. I mean, I do a lot of drawing.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah, because like speaking of podcasts from the episode we just recorded with Freya, I also listen to podcasts while drawing.
Ah, okay.
So, so that's a way to veg and do something productive at the same time.
Yeah.
When I'm burned out on one aspect, I'll plan to do something else entirely, but related to the project I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'm making progress. So if I'm getting really fed up of like, you know, putting together a system in Widget Satchel or in Metro Nexus, I'll be like, okay, for the next 2 days, I'm now going to be working on art. And I have that freedom because the projects I work on multiple things on them. Not everybody has that ability, but a lot of times that will refresh me. I'll just set aside and I'll be like, okay, I'm going to do some music now for the next couple of days. That's what I'm focused on.
Yeah.
And I'll put a pin in what I had before. And when I get back to it, I'll have like a bookmark almost. Like I'll know exactly where I left off. Mm-hmm. I won't just abandon it to come back just so I don't get, you know, I can pick up where I left off and then I'll just pivot to something else. And I try to fool myself into thinking that I'm making as much progress just in a different order.
Yeah.
And then I can, even if it's not true, if I believe it, then I can be a happier worker for my own thing.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's helpful. Yes, that's one thing I've noticed that's different about working at this job too. Is that like, oftentimes you just have to do a thing.
And right.
To
get you don't done. Have that flexibility.
I do not have that flexibility. Well, to be fair, at my job, like there's not a lot of. I don't want to say there's not a lot of delegation because maybe that's not completely accurate. But like that, you kind of pick your own tasks.
Yeah.
You make sure that the things get done that need to get done.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes there are things that like need to get done and you have a deadline. So you got to, you know, work at that.
Yeah.
And those are, can be frustrating and or stressful or both.
Mm-hmm.
That's what and or means. and so the, like in those situations, you know, I just have to work on that thing. So for 8 hours, I might be like kind of frustrated dealing with this one task that I just have to get done. And it's good. Like I'm making progress towards finishing this game and that feels fulfilling, but like, it's still frustrating cause I don't want to do it, whatever. But like, yeah, I don't get to pick my tasks. I don't get to pick what game I'm working on. I don't get to decide, that I don't want to do this right now. And you know what? I'm just going to do something else. Mm-hmm. And because I guess my role isn't exactly specialized. Cause like I add sounds and stuff to it, but I'm the lead developer, so I mainly do code. So I can't like I don't get to do design work. I don't get to do art. I can't do art anyway. You don't get to do music, or like I do sounds, but only when we need them, and we don't need them that often. We have most of the sounds in the game already.
Yeah.
So like I just have to keep. I just you know do a lot of code stuff.
Yeah. And it's interesting because like the way you've described your work.
Yeah.
Is that you because you are sort of principally in charge of the code base on this project, you have a lot of freedom in terms of how it's architected or re-architected as it gets refreshed.
Yes.
And you do get to, you do have some decision-making power of your own. And like you say, like you get to choose your tasks within this category.
Right.
And I would describe that as something that a lot of people in the game industry, you know, junior developers, people who are, you know, hire their first position in a company, they usually don't get even that level of freedom.
That's true.
But the thing is, even when you have that thing, it's still not enough to fight that feeling.
Yeah.
And I think what that means is that there's no way to get rid of it.
No.
Right? Like, it's not a matter of, like, appreciating what you have, but it's just, like, a human nature to need to be, like, refreshed and engaged and challenged no matter what your circumstances are.
Yeah, right? And like some of the tasks I'm doing are not necessarily challenging. They're just, you know, tedium. You got to get done.
Yeah.
So you just have to do it. And yeah, it's totally that. Like, it's just like you just have to get through the tedium.
And you have to find the pride in the completion, but not necessarily in the task.
In the work itself. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where I'm working is I'm blessed because like I do get to like pick the particular things I get to work on and stuff. Whereas like, in the AAA space, I'm not working in AAA space. My game is an indie game, I guess. Yes, it was.
he just checked.
Confirm.
Directory.
In the AAA space, you oftentimes, you get picked a specific role, and so you have to code this specific thing or make art for this specific thing or something like that. All of my coworkers, like, they get to pick tasks and stuff that they want to work on. Stuff. Mm-hmm. It's largely just like they get to pick what game they want to work on, and then they focus on that.
Right. And that's unique to your company because your company has a portfolio of web titles.
Yes.
That are all maintained by a group. But what you're working on is this PC console release.
Yes.
That's a sort of a special project for the company.
Yes.
And so it needs your full-time attention.
Yeah. So I was recently informed. I was very confused about the structure of my company for a long time. I was recently informed about how it works. Now, Pixelegs, which is what I work on, they do console games and PC games.
Mm-hmm.
And then GameSmart, which is what I was originally hired to work for, is our web browser games.
Right.
GameSmart, has been established for a while, and we make money based off of our audience in China. They play a lot of our games. I don't think we make a lot of money here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
And so like we try to make games based off of that. But from what I understand, our developers and artists don't really know like what makes the most money. So you kind of just make games and hope it sells.
Right,
sells, but like hope it makes money.
Mm-hmm.
We have like a currency thing, and like they had to buy currency to like buy stuff in our games.
Right. So it's a free to play kind of system.
Yeah, they're all free to play things.
Mm. It is kind of nice. You describe it like you're not sure what makes money. That's kind of like for a designer, that's probably nice because you get to then just design what you think is fun.
Yeah. But like at the other hand,
mechanics and,
but like on the other hand, I sort of, when I work on another game, I would like to like challenge myself and try to design a game that would make a lot of money. So like I kind of want to know about that kind of stuff.
Sighting of Steven Business.
Maybe a little. I haven't actually worked on any GameSmart games because as soon as I started working, I started to work on Treasure Stack. So I've been doing Pixelates the whole time. But like I've talked to my other coworkers and stuff, and you know, they've described their processes and things like that. They kind of just make games. They make small games because like the more games we have, the more valuable the whole surface of GameSmart is.
Yeah.
Because you just buy currency for all of the games. So the more currency you have, or like if you have currency, you can use it.
Oh, it's like an arcade
thing. Yeah, effectively. Yeah.
Oh, I actually didn't know that. That's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
The more games we have, the more valuable the whole surface is. And so like we just make more games.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it must be making some kind of money because they keep allowing us to do it.
Well, it lets the company try other things, like like the work you're doing.
Yes.
Is certainly enabled by the rest of the company's success.
Right. Yeah, my company does a whole lot of stuff. So I guess GameSmart is part of ADX Labs, which is a subset of.
Hold on, let me get out my notebook.
Yeah. Which it's a subset of ASUS. ASUS is the whole company. Mm-hmm. And we do a whole bunch of stuff. We've made phones. We have our own cryptocurrency. We have a hip hop app. I don't know what that does.
He's making this up.
Just listing off things now. karaoke machine.
I would not be surprised. We have earphones. We have headphones.
Yeah.
Two.
Got the kitchen sinks.
No kitchen sinks as far as I know. But I would not be surprised too. So many things. But like one of our QA guys, he has been in the company for like 4 or 5 years or something. So he's like very familiar with all this stuff. And he keeps informing me on all these new products we have, which is really fascinating.
Yeah.
Because I just would never have expected any of that stuff. My company does a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, another thing that I found that's different about like working as a game dev as your day job is that like you don't really get to pick who you're working with because people get hired based off of their skills and their personality and like maybe how they fit in the culture, but they might not necessarily mesh with your work style.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's difficult to like, you know, work with other people and and, you know, be productive, because like you just aren't meshing. And I don't know, sometimes you might not like who you're working with too. I really haven't had that much of that kind of experience, but like, you know, it happens.
Yeah.
That's just the nature of life in general. You have to be around, sometimes you have to be around people.
You know, I've worked really closely with people who I work really well with,
yeah,
but have no interest, like we have no social interest in each other.
Yeah.
And that is weird.
Yeah.
I'd much rather, because it's hard then to, like there's the space between tasks, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. there's the joking in the office, and like that's all ancillary to your work a lot of times. And right. I'm kind of a head down, get it done person most of the time.
Yeah.
But I also don't want to be a different person at work than I am in other situations. Sure. I find it difficult to sort of put on that face.
Yeah.
And so it's very hard for me to work with people who I would otherwise mesh really well with professionally.
Yeah.
But then have no other connection to.
Yeah.
And that's not hard for everybody. But it's hard for me.
Yeah. I don't think I've had that experience. I feel like I've been able to find some, I'm really good at like finding some form of a connection between people and stuff and myself. Uh-huh.
Well, so, you're a pal. Everyone loves you.
Oh, gee.
Who wouldn't get along with Steven? I want to find that person and then kick them into a volcano.
Dang. yeah. So I try to foster that kind of, and in fact, I had to do that at work now, because like we mm-hmm. didn't have, we have a regular board game day
yeah.
on Fridays now because I facilitated.
Yeah. That. You started that, right?
I did.
Look at you building company culture.
You know, I try. yeah. And like, that's been helpful because like I get to know people and it's a nice reprieve from like, you know, the 9 to 5 that everyone's doing. Well, I guess really at our place, it's more like 10 to 6 for most people. But yeah. And I like, that's a really helpful thing because then you get to know other people and they get to know you. And I think that like, as a result, we've all meshed a lot better
mm-hmm.
Because you're, you know, in communication, you like each other's company, or at least, you know, we do what we can.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's been helpful. I think in like other places, like when I did work at Concrete Software as a QA intern, part of the issue was I was a QA intern and felt like I shouldn't be talking to people because I was an intern. But I did not feel like I was, I guess I didn't feel like I was like friends with people there. Like you were saying, Mark, like mm-hmm. I think I had some, you know, we all have play games and work on games together. So there's that in common. But like, aside from that, I didn't really feel like we were conversing with one another. I don't know what it was. I don't know. Maybe the cubicles were too tall or something. But yeah, that was an issue with that place
yeah.
that I didn't like about it. But I think that it has changed a lot since then. Lane mm-hmm. still works there and he's having a really good time recently.
Yeah, the last couple times I talked to him, it's a good place to work.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. I think for him, I think that his role has changed. He's like manipulated his role. Manipulated. Makes it sound evil.
Yeah.
He's changed his role so that he gets to do a lot more design than just dev work.
Yeah.
Which is really great because mm-hmm. like he's really into both of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has been more valuable to him, and like he just gets to, you know, work with a bunch of cool people and design and focus on code.
That's a really interesting insight, which is a lot of times you'll work at a place and you're like, oh, I don't really fit in here. It's not really making a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
And some of that might be just like, oh, well, maybe the company doesn't foster really good relationships. Maybe it's not good at onboarding new people mm-hmm. or finding what they're best at. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's just a simple matter of like, it's not the right fit. Like that's like the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you're a QA intern. It's like, you know, even when you were doing that work, you were overqualified for that work. Mm. Like, I don't know that you would say that out loud to anybody at that time.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it wasn't really what you wanted to be doing. And so it was difficult for you to like, feel like you belonged.
Right.
And then you need to do that, I think, first before you can start building the rest of the connection.
Yeah.
Whereas Lane, on the other hand, he's found a way and he's done a lot of the work to carve out his place
yeah.
in that space.
Right, right.
And so it's, you know, it's on your shoulders too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's something I'm really excited about, like, after Treasure Stack comes out, is that, like, I think that we could start working on projects, like, as a whole group, because only a few of us work on Treasure Stack, not, like, yeah. the whole company. But, like, if we wanted to make another console game, it would be really cool if we got all the devs and all the artists to do certain particular parts of it. And then do game smart stuff on the side as well.
Yeah.
Because like I think we all have like our own specialties. Like one of our devs is really good at prototyping stuff, and he's released like 4 or 5 games. And he started about when I did, so he's released 4 or 5 games at the same time that I've been working on the one. and they're smaller, but like there's a couple that are like really well designed games too. Like they would be really good on mobile. One of my coworkers has been like on his work breaks. He will like play the game a whole lot. Mm-hmm. He'll like play it every other day. It's pretty good. We have a bunch of artists and stuff, and they don't get to put their art in like a console game, which mm-hmm. I mean would be really cool. Like they could put a lot of effort into making, I don't know, 3D models or something mm-hmm. and put it in. So like that kind of stuff is really exciting. Another thing that's like cool about having a day job is that like you can force tasks onto other people. Force is maybe not a good way of saying it, but
you can delegate.
You can delegate tasks to other people. Because I don't know, sometimes they have more experience mm-hmm. In those kinds of things. Like for example, I was trying to do translation for Treasure Tech because we're releasing it on a in a bunch of different countries mm-hmm. and such. And I've never done that before, and I did not.
Doing the translation. You mean implementing a localization system?
Yes, implementing a localization system. Right. And I've never done that before, and like I did not know what I was doing, and like I could learn it, and like it would work perfectly fine after I figured out how to do it, but like it would take so much time. Whereas other people in the company have already, or who are working on Treasure Stack, have already done this kinds of things, and like would be much faster at it, and would not have to spend a bunch of time learning it. So I gave it to him. And it felt great because I could just work on other stuff. And that's nice because like when I'm working on Fingence, if I'm not doing a thing, no one's doing a thing most of the time.
Yeah.
So like it's a weird kind of pressure because like you could just not have it in the game because there's no obligation to have it in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really want it in the game and nobody else wants it in the game, you have to figure out how to do it. So you'll have to do it yourself. Mm-hmm. Whereas like, at my company, like if my boss wants it in the game, it's gonna be in the game, but you don't have to necessarily put it in the game. So it's a weird kind of,
you mean you personally?
Yeah.
you don't mean get around your boss, you
know? Right, no, it's in there. We have localization, Dylan, please. Dylan's the name of my boss, which is kind of confusing because it's also
the not the same as my boyfriend Dylan.
Right.
Everyone's got a Dylan.
Yeah. For real though. Yeah. Another thing I wanted to bring up that like that you mentioned, Mark, is that like when you are finished working on your game and like you've done your 8 hours, you can just go home and not deal with that for all the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Which I felt like I could not do when I was working on Fingence. And I'm sure you're feeling that pressure when you're not working on Widget Satchel.
Oh yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
It's not, I don't have it nice like that.
Yeah. Right. So it's frustrating because like you said, every time you're watching Netflix or mm-hmm. I don't know, on YouTube or sleeping, sometimes you could just be like, oh man, I could be working on Widget Satchel or whatever else.
But and that's not to say that that's like the worst thing.
Yeah. Right?
It's a motivator and it keeps me going. And
right.
As the sort of like the main shepherd of the project, like it needs that from me, mm-hmm. Whereas, Treasure Stack is a big point of your professional career mm-hmm. and it'd be a big thing to put on your resume and on your credits list. And it's a big deal, but it doesn't belong to you.
Yeah.
And the cost of that or the thing you get in return for that mm-hmm. is that you don't have the pressures of what happens when it belongs to you.
Right.
Right?
Yes. That's my boss's job.
And I'm sure he stresses out every night at dinner about the next step or whatever. He's like, what am I going to tell Steven to do tomorrow?
Yeah.
It probably keeps him up at night.
Right. Yeah. That is definitely a perk/downside.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like, I'm working on this thing and like I could just not work on it after I finish my 8 hours, but like it's not mine, I guess. Like I have some stake in it.
Oh yeah.
I mean I'm putting a bunch of work into it and I'm doing design work and I want it to succeed. But I guess it's for a different reason than I would if I would want Fingence to succeed.
Yeah.
Cause like it's not as personal. It's not as a personal thing.
Sometimes when you're working at a game dev company,
it's promising so far.
you have to do a lot of crunch or other not very great labor practices.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And if that's the case, and even if it's not the case, you should might consider organizing your fellow coworkers into a union.
Nice. Well done.
So get on that, Stephen.
Okay.
The other thing I was considering using as a transition is that there's a lot of songs that have to do with the labor movement and stuff. My friend Emily and their family are in a choir that sings all like labor and union songs, which is pretty great. Like this one. I am a union woman, just as brave as I can be. I do not like the bosses, and the bosses don't like me. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. They sing that in a choir.
Yes. Nice. It's not exactly how that one goes, but okay. I'll put a link in the show notes to a bunch of labor union songs.
They sound like union shanties.
Pretty much. This topic, I thought we should talk about because of a lot of the like current events that are happening recently.
Mainly just things coming to light.
Yes.
I think that like this has been a problem for a while. But okay, Rockstar has been notorious for employees overworking and working 80-hour weeks.
Which is or 100-hour weeks.
Or 100-hour weeks. And like the higher-ups are, you know, working these long weeks and they're not pressuring quotes them to work these hours, but like if they're doing it, then like everybody else feels obligated to do it.
It creates an environment where you are more valuable to the company if you do put in that time.
Right.
And even if you're not obligated or even told and any like implied to you, the reality of it is that like you become less valuable and less appealing, and it makes your relationship toxic if you don't participate in those systems.
Exactly.
You know?
So, you look like the person who's slacking off, even though you're doing the regular amount of work.
Right. The expectations change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so the topic of unions came up.
Yes. Because when you're part of a union, basically what a union is a bunch of people who work together, band together to make like a little organization that represents, and they have like a representative negotiate your contract for everybody. So everyone has sort of an equal footing, and together you can say, we want higher wages. We want like better working conditions. We don't want crunch. We don't want like all these things that, and it's the funny thing is like all this is me on my soapbox a little bit. This whole thing is going to be me on my soapbox. but like it actually is to the company's, the employer's benefit to have their workers happy.
Yeah.
Like, I doubt the people, because I doubt the people that are working 100 hours are going to be able to work 100 hours forever.
Yeah.
And are they really getting that good of work done at hour 100? Like, I seriously doubt that. Yeah. Healthy game devs are better game devs.
True. Very true.
Mm-hmm. And like, we see a lot of people in the games industry drop out and move to other industries because they want to like have lives and not take years off their life by being so much stress.
Right. Burnout is a very real thing that happens. And it's unfortunate that like a lot of it comes to that.
Mm-hmm. And like you say, it's not just, there's, you know, the benefit to the company overall and not just in those like larger term schemes. But when you say like the union negotiates, it doesn't just mean that it's a fight between like, we want more money versus no, we don't want to give you money. It's that a union, the union wants the company to survive.
Yes.
Yeah. And so when it negotiates, it of course has an interest as well. And those can be at odds, but it's actually easier to find a compromise than you'd think. Like, it's not just about like, we want to pay you nothing. No, pay us everything. It's not, that's not your starting point, right? Like, a lot of times unions will negotiate pay reductions when companies don't do well in an effort to keep everybody's jobs. Like, it's a way to help companies make better decisions by taking the interests of everybody into account.
Yeah.
And so it's not always just a fight between fat cat union gangsters and like cigar chomping backroom management. Like, you know, if there's good faith on all sides, it really is mutually beneficial. And I like that could be seen as a political statement, but I'd like to think that it's not. I think that's just a true fact. Right?
Well, like one of the examples I was going to bring up is Vox Media, which runs Polygon, one of the game dev journalism outlets. They unionized their editorial and video staff recently, and the it took a really long time for Vox to recognize their union, which confused everyone because they're like, we're not saying we're like working here is bad. In fact, it's really great. And we just want to make sure that it continues to be really great.
Yeah.
Because like the company's growing or whatever. So it wasn't like, hey, we're having terrible things happen at work. It's more, it was more like, we want to just, you know, make sure that it keeps going exactly the way it's going. So yeah.
Right. It wasn't in response to a problem.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was a proactive measure to support the company's growth.
Yes. Right? Yep. And make sure that it's like sustainable mm-hmm. for everybody. So yeah. So unions can be good for everybody.
You know, a similar story, Gawker Media's editorial unionized, I think just before Gawker went under, right?
Oh.
And turned into the Gizmodo Media Group. And was then bought by Univision, I think.
Yeah, and that story.
The fact that they had a union, I think what it is they were organized under the Writers Guild of America East, which okay. does, it's, you know, theater and movie writers, but it also does other types of writers.
Fox is under the same one.
Oh, great. And so I think that really saved a lot of people's livelihoods in that transition. It didn't save everybody's jobs, certainly. Oh, sure. But it made it, you know, it was like a just-in-time kind of scenario, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like people were also talking about unions because of the whole Telltale thing that happened.
Yes.
So Telltale basically shut down and they did it without, even though they knew it was going to happen, they didn't tell anyone until like the moment it was happening and everyone lost their job and their benefits and everything and no severance pay.
Right.
And like people were saying like if they had had a union, they would have had to like be more transparent about what was happening. And so like people might have been able to like help course correct what was happening.
Right, right. Or I mean, but, or just wind it down in a more responsible manner.
Yeah.
You know,
be like, okay, make sure that we have, you know, make sure that we have a, you know, if we stop production at this date so that we have enough money to give everyone like...
Yeah, some severance or whatever, right? Instead of... Because, I think the you know, if you're management, if you're, you know, you believe in your company, you're trying to save it with every last breath you have. Mm-hmm. But if you had these other stakeholders meeting with you, you could maybe have a more realistic approach into what was going to happen. And then everybody could have come out a little bit better. Mm-hmm. They could have had a little less waste in the process. You know?
Yeah.
Would have been nice.
It's worker representation. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, that's good. It's important. Right. And it can prevent those kinds of things from happening or lessen the impact.
Yeah.
I'm blessed because my company, I'm hourly. So like if I do have to crunch, I get compensated for it.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. But like other people are salaried and such, and they do not get compensated their 100-hour work, you know, periods.
Yeah.
So like that's bad. And something needs to change about that.
I will say though that there is some. I've had hourly positions where I felt better, more comfortable than I would have if I was salaried. Mm-hmm. Particularly because the work I would do in agencies and ad agencies would be very deadline based.
Oh,
so sure. I would have days where I'd be sitting on my hands, and then I'd have days where like I'd work for, you know, 18 hours.
Yeah.
And being hourly made me a little more comfortable with that. But should I have been so comfortable with that?
You know? Well, right. So, I know. Like it's not. Well, I haven't had to do crunch at my job.
Sure,
but like
sure.
I've been fine. 40 hours every week, basically.
Right, you're doing okay.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, like, that's still, you're, at least you're still getting compensated. So, like, I agree with you, though, that, like it still sucks. 18-hour work days are, that's...
Right.
I agree with you with that. I agree with you on that.
And it's just a matter of, like, you know, making sure you see the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, certainly if I was salaried in that position, I'd be like throwing away a lot of hours mm-hmm. or I'd be less motivated to, you know, I'd be making a more forceful case for pushing a deadline than trying to meet it. And that might have been better for the company ultimately. Mm. I don't actually, it's case by case, of course.
Sure.
I also don't mind working late if, you know, if it's fair, if I feel it's fair in certain cases, but like it's, that's why a union is important in situations, not necessarily like that, but situations like that, but worse. Because then they're the ones who can make the larger decisions instead of you in the trenches trying to figure out what's practical and making those choices and then gearing how you approach your own work and what motivations you have. You yourself don't have a perfectly objective perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And so having a sort of broader representation that can answer those questions for you, who can analyze all those particular situations, saves you a lot of stress as well as, you know, livelihood and sustainable work environments.
Yes.
So I was looking up a ton about unions and kind of went down rabbit holes. And also, like, the rules are so complicated for, like, how you make a union and, like, how unions have changed over time. So if I mess something up, I'm sorry. Please let me know. But
nicegames.club/feedback.
Yes. okay, so brief overview of unions. Basically, a lot of them were started in industries that were like manual labor. So like the railroad, like factory workers, and stuff like that. A lot of stuff was happening in the, like big pushes happened in the 30s. So there's this law called the National Labor Relations Act of 1935, which basically made it so that people could organize legally into trade unions. They could collective bargain and take collective action to strike without repercussions like people getting killed, which happened before that.
Right. Yeah. strikes were ad hoc events prior to that. They weren't formalized. Yeah. And it created dangerous situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This unfortunate thing about unions is that oftentimes because they were made up of lots of white people, that they were like very racist.
That's a fact I didn't know.
Like all of our great institutions?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But recently, so there's this big organization that advocates for unions and like helps organize unions called the AFL-CIO, which is the Oh, there's so many acronyms. Okay. Their own website doesn't have the full out of
there. Because it's too long of an acronym.
Isn't it also lost its meaning a little bit? Like a lot of these organizations, they evolve over the years, right?
Well, yes. And then since unions can, like other unions can help other unions form, you can have things like the United Steelworkers, for example, cover like tons of industries that aren't the steelworkers because like they all sort of, everybody sort of helps each other to organize. Mm-hmm. It's the American Federation of Labor and Congress of Industrial Organizations, which is a combination of two labor organizations that were helping to unionize everybody.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they've started working on trying to like reconcile how the labor movement kind of failed the civil rights movement because we still have problems with that because of the police unions, et cetera, where it's like... unions working against social justice, which is like mind-boggling.
Well, you might be on one side of social justice, but not on the other side.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's, insofar that unions have a bad reputation, it's in that they get entrenched and they're clicky, and that seems like a weird word to describe it, but that's kind of what it is.
No, yeah.
And I think part of the result of that is the sort of like the tribalism of it, right? And that's definitely true of certain types of unions. The policemen's unions, particularly because they're, the policemen are generally underpaid. They also have very dangerous jobs, and they're at the front of many controversies. And so you should criticize where it's earned, but like you can kind of have some understanding for how insular and protective they can be, which can lead to corruption.
Yeah.
And that has happened. And that's partly why there needs to be more. Like there needs to be regulation and a public opinions on how labor unions are formed so that they can do good and not, you know, become entrenched and do wrong.
Yeah.
Right. There's no like balance in all things, I guess. Right.
Yeah, exactly. There's one nice, hopeful story from the 30s.
Just one.
Well, I mean, in regards to this, there's lots of stories like this, but there's this one union organizer named Miles Horton. He's from Tennessee, was from Tennessee. He also ended up being like a big white ally for the civil rights movement. He was like friends with Martin Luther King and stuff.
Cool.
And his big thing was he wouldn't come in, he would help organize unions, but he's like, I won't come into your place or to your factory or whatever unless... you don't leave the black workers behind. Mm-hmm. And he was like, if you all stick together, I will come help you. But if you don't, the minute you do anything racist, I'm out. So that helped a lot of unions actually be stronger, because it was like the whole factory could come together,
right,
and they wouldn't leave half their workers out.
Yeah, right. They could be a little more collective for the for the bargaining.
Yeah. Not only that, but like, if you keep enough workers still there, they'll just do the work of twice with the people.
Yeah.
So like, it makes your point not as strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's.
So it had a practical dimension as well as an ethical one.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of, I feel like that's a lot of things. Like, it's the unions, they're practical and ethical.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's a little bit of the sordid history of unions. But most of the time, good things,
mm-hmm.
think.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's also important to talk about like some of the downsides, like we brought up on like police unions and such. But also, somebody on MSP Game Dev Slack had brought up that like unionizing would make it a lot more difficult for independent game developers to like, you know, establish themselves as a business.
Yeah,
because it would be more expensive,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't know all the details.
Well, I don't know the. You know, I mean, I think people can probably imagine where that's difficult. And I think the thing is, unions aren't just like a free club you're part of, right?
Yeah.
Like you have dues and a lot of times it can be more expensive than you think they're worth. When my wife was a teenager, she worked at a grocery store and they were unionized, but she did not need that union, right?
Yeah.
Other people that worked there did, but she didn't need it. Mm-hmm. And part of what made that union work is that people like her who didn't need it also contributed to its success. So ultimately it was a good thing,
yeah,
but like it didn't do her any good and it cost her part of her paycheck.
Right.
And so that's a difficult, a push and pull. And there's sort of a lot of legal arguments about like what, if you join a company that's governed by that its employees are governed by a union, what rights do you have to say, I don't want to be part of this. And that's it's called right to work. And it's a bit of a disingenuous phrase because because when you don't when you can opt out of the collective, then the collective weakens.
Yeah, right.
And that is the purpose of that. And so it's politically fraught, and people have their own opinions on it, of course. Mm-hmm. But in the case of smaller industries and really creative industries, you can really feel that a lot more because I mean we're used to beg, borrowing, and stealing. Working for nothing or free, and then suddenly you want to form a collective or a small group, a company, and suddenly you're management now.
Yeah.
And you don't have any money. It's like,
right.
so what's, you know, what, how is that? And that's definitely true. I've experienced this in the film industry, mm-hmm. Where, you know, you want to put up money for a film and, there are certain actors you can't hire because they are union actors and one, if you're a small production, the SAG and Equity and the other actors' guilds, they understand this and they have exceptions so their union actors can work on non-union projects.
Right.
But you have to apply and you have to gain non-union status. It's like it's fairly bureaucratic. And I think ultimately there are pluses and minuses. It could be a little easier for independent filmmakers, but it's a bit of a hassle and it makes it like less appealing to hire a good actor who's part of a union.
Yeah.
And so it does limit some of that. And I think that's would definitely be true if the games industry was much more unionized. You'd have this notion of people who want to do side projects, who want to work for their friends on the weekends.
Right.
And do the things that, Steven, you're too tired to do. you know, what are the rules about that going to be?
Yeah.
And because if there aren't rules, then that goodwill can be exploited.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of a union is to protect the value of the work.
Right.
It doesn't matter who's employing the work, right?
Yeah.
And so there is always multiple dimensions to it,
right?
That can be a little bit difficult, to navigate.
Yeah.
And you know, there's no calculus that benefits everybody in equal measure,
right?
Yeah,
it's not as simple. Let's just give everybody equal amounts of money. They don't all need equal amounts of money, and it's a whole bunch of that stuff.
Yeah.
If only it was so simple.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to make sure that we brought up both the good sides and bad sides. Because I think that I'm in favor of unions myself personally. But like, you know, I think there are some things that we should consider, like the things that we brought up here.
Well, it's the difference between ideology and policy.
Right.
Right. I think ideologically, I think all of us in this table are pro-union.
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't believe that's an extraordinarily political statement. I feel comfortable just being pro-union.
Yeah.
That said, when you have to then implement policy and how do you actually form these unions? What shape do they take? What are the exceptions? How does it work? Then there's just tons of room for discussion and debate and experimentation and exceptions and all of that stuff, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So if you want to start a union with all of its pros and cons, there's different ways of going about it. So depending on what type of organization you work for. So for example, I work for the government. So there's different rules that my workplace would have to go through than a private workplace. And a private workplace, what you're working under is the National Labor Regulation Board.
Relations Board.
National Labor Relations Board, which is like federal agency that basically oversees all the unions.
Yeah, they rule on disputes. They handle, they're a regulatory agency. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to register your union with them. And your employer has to recognize it. So that can lead to lots of there's this thing called the cards, there's a card sign or something like that, where you have to, you get everybody who wants to be in the union to sign a union card. Mm-hmm. And if you get 30% of your company or your unit to sign those, then you can go to the company and say, hey, look, we've got 30% at least who want to be part of this. Please recognize our union. And then if they do, then you don't have to, you can like go register and start negotiating. They also can bring, you also can, if they say no, and also if you can just do this anyway, go to the NLRB and do a secret ballot. So, which takes a little while, which is why the companies really want you to do that, because then they have time to like drum up anti-union support, even though they're not supposed to do that.
Right. There's campaigning involved in these
things. Yes. but the secret ballot, you have to get 50%. And if you do, then it's like you get recognized or whatever. Mm-hmm. The company has to recognize you at that point.
Yeah.
So, with the public sector where I work, the rules are different and more confusing.
Isn't that always the way?
Because you're kind of under national law, but most of what happens is state law. So there's some, like Minnesota, we're fortunate that if you're a public employee, you can unionize. There's lots of rules, but you can unionize. Some states do not allow public workers to unionize, which I just think should not be a thing, non-partisanly.
Well, the argument there, and I also don't agree with it, but the argument there is that the employers are the taxpayers, and so the extra cost of union overhead, there's like some reasoning to say like it would make government more expensive and raise taxes, and that's why we would blah, 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 whatever. And so like that itself is not a disingenuous argument, but like I don't buy it for half a second. You know?
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's how it is right now, anyway. Mm-hmm. And luckily, here in Minnesota, we have pretty strong union support. So, so we'll see. My place is currently not unionized, which I don't know if anybody knows, but I didn't know. All legislative workers in Minnesota are not unionized.
Yeah.
Oh.
We are not part of MINIT, the Minnesota IT.
Oh, that explains a lot.
Yes.
My dad works at MnDOT, Minnesota Department of Transportation. No one knows what MnDOT is. And he is part of MINIT, yeah.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, all that makes sense now. Because he was talking about that, and he's like, oh, is your friend Martha in MINIT? And I was like, I don't know, I'll ask her. And then you said no, and I was like, what?
And now we've caught up to the present. Right. So Minnesota IT does all the executive branch stuff. Mm-hmm. So all the agencies, MnDOT, pollution control, all those places.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, it's interesting that, yeah, you're not unionized. And whether you should be or not is maybe not something you want to get into specifically.
Probably should not say on this podcast. Right. But you could probably guess my position. Nonpartisanly, right. Of course.
But, there's definitely the case of, like, you know, a union isn't always necessary in every scenario. Mm-hmm. I tend to lean in favor of at least exploring the idea when it's an option.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be the default position of every industry and everything everywhere.
Yeah.
There needs some practical elements to it. And I think that the risk to unions these days is just the gig economy and certainly a lot of legislative and political efforts to reduce the power of unions. But just the freedom people have to switch careers and change jobs makes unions less valuable to them in a lot of ways.
That's true.
They feel like they don't do as much, and so they're much less likely to vote for them in a scenario where they have to do a secret ballot. And I don't have the statistics in front of me. I don't know if you've looked into this at all, Martha, but like the last 50 years, just like the power of unions has just shrunk dramatically. And that a lot of people have been associating that with the fact that the GDP of the country has gone up at a fairly good rate. You know, we have a growing economy. Even in bad years, the overall trend line has been okay. Mm-hmm. But the average wages have not risen at the same level.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people tie that correlation and perhaps causation to the reduction in power of unions in the country.
Oh. Yeah, I did read a statistic that union membership was in 2016 was one of the lowest that it has been of percentage-wise of the United States.
Yeah. And these things have network effects. So it's like, it's not just that the unions themselves have less power. It's that when it's less a part of American life, then it becomes, there's fewer advocates, there's fewer people who understand the benefits, and fewer people who can navigate the difficulties.
Yeah.
Right.
Bringing it back to our industry, video game developers have a tradition of, you know, like working at a place and then leaving it and going to a new place and getting promoted as a result of it instead of staying at the same company. So like,
right. We worked on a game and then I'm going to be hired on another game.
Yes.
And people do stay at the same company for
they
many
do
years.
Sometimes, yeah.
But that's not always the way
it is. And sometimes, and I mean, often we have burnout and stuff too. So like people will just leave it. So like a union maybe isn't as valuable as we might feel it might be to other people because of those reasons.
Well, it's harder to explain it, but I think the best analogy that people have used when they argue for the case of unions in the games industry, other than the basic like human decency reasons, is a comparison to the film industry, which is heavily unionized.
Mm-hmm.
And like I mentioned, you know, the sort of difficulties with indie film, but like, you know, the Hollywood films, like there's the directors, the people who have the most power on a film set, they are unionized.
Yeah.
They feel that they need protection. Yeah. If you're an actor on a film set, you have to have 10 hours between shoots. You can't work all night. You know, there are union rules that protect child. Well, there's laws that protect child actors, but there are also union provisions as well. Like the caterers are unionized. The below the line crew are unionized. Everyone's unionized,
mm-hmm.
and that industry makes tons of money.
Yeah,
you know, and it's not an easy relationship, right? It creates a lot of bureaucracy,
right.
But like there. You know, no one's being bled dry. And I think that the video game industry, which is also a very hit-driven and high-profit industry, at least in the AAA space, I think a lot of the arguments are saying, like, well, listen, these games are very expensive. We take huge risks on them. Like, this is unsustainable. And I think you just look at other industries that have done it. And it's not that it would be a one-to-one relationship. But, like, I think it is somewhat disingenuous to just say, like, well, it could never work.
Right.
It would probably work differently.
Yeah.
But and then you end up with these stories of people at Telltale saying that like they put in all this overtime, they felt this ownership, and then suddenly company's gone, they're fired, and then they look in the sky and for the first moment realize that they actually don't own anything.
Yeah.
And they felt like they did. And that part of that's the culture of it, right? If they don't expect to have the protection of a union, then they fill that with this sort of other sense of like belonging. And then when they realize that like when the rubber meets the road, they're just working for hire. And, you know, there's no one who's like an evil villain in this scenario. It's just the way it goes. And it can change,
mm-hmm.
right? It could change.
Yes. I'd like to leave that on a
hope. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Well, there's the Game Workers
Unite.
Martha, do you have links for them that we can put in the show notes?
Yes, I'll show those in the show notes. They are working to try to get unions in the game industry, and they have a lot of cool resources and links. And they were at GDC, weren't they?
I think that's where the movement kind of started.
I wish I was there.
I don't know if it was, you know, my memory is probably failing me, but I don't know if it was born out of any particular scandal or event. I think it was a good time to launch that campaign. And they have since, there's like different chapters of that organization. Now they're not union chapters, but like they're definitely, they have the spirit of it, and they're trying to make it something that like you just can't ignore anymore.
Yeah.
And it might take a while, but I do hope that they make a dent in the system anyway.
Yes. Well, I said I wanted to leave it on a hopeful note, but I want to know what this local 455 pipe fitters union thing
is. Oh, I was just, because I wanted to.
Coda.
the reason I'm so, like, I have been pro-union my whole life is because my grandpa was part of the local 455 pipe fitters union. Mm. And like every summer we would go to the pipe fitters union picnic, and like they would had all these like cool fun activities for kids to do. So I like mm-hmm. have always had this, like, I don't know. And the cool thing about the pipe fitters union and a lot of like trade unions for more manual labor stuff is that they would actually, like back in the day, they would actually find you jobs. Like you would work for the union and then they would find you a job. So mm-hmm. it wasn't like that sort of model could work for the people who, like more people who move around or like more freelancers, where it's like becomes sort of like a.
Right. And that ends up being a service to the industry in a way that would be very appealing to, you know, companies whose HR departments are fairly costly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And like, I don't know. I just, the union has been really great for my family. So, cool. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I asked about it.
Yeah.
That's good.
Game workers unite.
Hey, that's our show. If you haven't already, subscribe to Nice Games Club in your favorite podcast app. And be sure to give it a good review if you liked it or nice like us. We know you're out there, so leave a review and tell all your friends too. Organize them all, get them together, and leave a review. Have them tell all their friends too. And then we can form a union of Nice Games Club listeners.
Yes.
That's my clumsy way of tying that into the pitch at the end here.
You'll be part of the club.
If you didn't like that, then you should get all your friends to listen to the show so they can leave us negative feedback about it. And then we'll listen if there's more of you. So yes. That's how it works. So really, you got to spread the word either way.
Yeah.
We want to hear directly from you, of course. So follow us on Twitter and all the other things at Nice Games Club. And you can email us at contact@nicegames.club. Lastly, you can find out more about the show and your nice host, as well as get all the links and show notes from this and other episodes at nicegames.club. So until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice. Let's see. Transition.
Martha, are you telling me that you were listening to Steven this whole time instead of coming up with a transition?
Shush.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale. For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.